Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Northern Timber Outfitters Foulcast. I'm your host, Sean, and today I have Grayson here. Grayson is from Pennsylvania, just like I am. We actually live very close to each other, and Grayson is a fellow waterfowl hunter. Him and I, we've shared some stories and stuff before, so I decided to have him on the podcast tonight. Grayson, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Sean.
Absolutely, man. So I know we were just briefly talking about some stuff here and how you got into waterfowl hunting. But go ahead and share with our listeners and stuff kind of what got you into it, because I think it's really cool kind of to see how you got into it, you know, hearing how you got into it.
Sure, yeah. So I actually listened to your first episode, and kind of like your guest on that episode, didn't really have a whole lot of family members that were, you know, into hunting. So when I went to college, I, you know, got into a group of guys that really like to do upland pheasant hunting. You know, being out in South Central PA, that's a pretty popular thing to do. So I kind of cut my teeth when it came to learning how to hunt anything, pheasants and upland game. But then very quickly decided that waterfowl was something that I was going to want to get into. Yep.
And I feel like I see that a lot. You have some guys who are just diehard upland guys, and I understand why. Here in PA, I've never really been able to like be a diehard upland guy, especially where we're at in southeastern PA.
Oh, just because, yeah.
You know, all across PA, they're stock pheasants, but the game lands down here where they stock them, they get hit hard. Yeah, it is. So it's like to be like a diehard like upland guy, I just can't get hooked on it and stuff. And actually, I haven't even really gone, I don't think, in a couple years now. But yeah, I've actually talked with a couple people, and I just took a kid out. I say a kid, he's older than I am. I took a guy out Black Friday duck hunting, and that was just, he had the same story. Now I think some of his family and stuff hunted, but he was an upland hunter all his life, you know, ran pointer dogs, everything. Mm-hmm. And then was just like, this is fun, but I want to go to that next level, and got into waterfowl hunting. And I feel like I see that a lot. And I think it's pretty popular because it's like the whole wing shooting is fun. You know, you see videos of, you know, South Dakota pheasant hunts and stuff. Yeah. Where it's just like, they're out there walking the fields, you know, yelling rooster when it's a bird. It's a ton of fun, and it's just like, but you know, when you do it around here, it's like, okay, this is fun, but it's not enough. And I feel like that's where people kind of turn to waterfowl hunting, because like you were saying, there's just so much more. The shot is the last part.
Yep, that's kind of how I think of it. I think a lot of, especially in PA, you know, it's kind of a put and take stocking, a lot like trout is in PA. You know, everybody likes to go out for trout in the spring, but it's not the same as going to, you know, like Colorado and fishing some real cold water stream and, you know, the mountains. But it's both are, you know, there's a low barrier to entry. It doesn't cost a lot. You got to buy an orange vest, an orange hat, and a shotgun, and you can go out hunting. So for people that don't have, you know, generational knowledge or mentors to take people out hunting, it was a pretty easy thing to get into. But I had always grown up, you know, watching a lot of the hunting, you know, shows on TV, and I would always gravitate to the waterfowl stuff because I'm like, man, these guys are out, you know, in different environments. It could be a cut cornfield, it could be water, it could be big water, it could be, you know, flooded timber, you know, down in Arkansas. And it's like, so they're in this crazy environment, and then you got to have the right, you know, species of decoys. You got to set them out in the right pattern. You got to have the right to call, when not to call. And then, like I said, the culminating part of it is if the birds do it right, then you get to shoot, which, you know, can be in and of itself, but it's like, it's just this, you know, symphony you have to get right to be successful.
Yeah, it really is. And I will say, since I got into waterfowl hunting, I will say, you know, the further we go, it seems like the more the sport explodes, almost to a point where it's getting like excessive. And it's just, there's so many people at waterfowl hunt, and it's just, you know, like in areas like where we live, it's just like there's so many people that do it. There's just not enough area. There's not enough people who have been shown, like, hey, listen, you know, work the birds. This is how you work the birds. And it's great to see people out waterfowl hunting. It's great, you know, they're buying the stamp, they're doing this. It's great to see that. But it's like, you know, there's just Yeah, everybody sees the TV show and it's like, that is awesome. And then, you know, they go out and it's like, there's a lot to learn, but it is still great to see guys getting out and giving it a try. Because I will say that was one thing that really kind of sucked me into it. my family, nobody waterfowl hunted. You know, we're deer hunters, and
Right.
that's how my family has been for, you know, a couple of generations now. It's just deer hunting.
A lot
There
of PA,
was,
bet.
and even my family from Massachusetts, that's what they did. They deer hunted. There was. That's what they did. So, I kind of started to take a real, like, I had a lot of curiosity into waterfowl hunting. Probably, I think, before I was even able to get my license, like, I want to do that, but just nobody in my family did it.
Yeah,
Nobody had the
how do you
knowledge.
get started?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like, like, we don't know what we're doing, you know, and it's like, well, I turned 16 and I was like, no, I'm going now. I'm gonna figure this thing out. And it was just, yeah, it's just there's so much that goes into it. And it's like it's almost like that work for the reward type deal, you know. You put in all that time and effort, and when it all comes together and you got birds, you know, maple leafing in the decoys and stuff, and it's just them shots are ringing out. It's just a feeling like none other. And I think, yeah, that is why people get so sucked into it, because it is an addiction. And I'll say I'm addicted, you know. If I could hunt every day, I would.
I'm fortunate in that I get to hunt a little more than, probably your average PA waterfowl hunter. I work a job where I can get out at least one weekday. So, I'm not just restricted to my Saturday since we can't hunt on Sundays in this state, which is a whole nother topic in and of itself.
Yeah, we won't
But
touch on that one in here.
but with that said, you can kind of to a lot of guys, younger and older, and it seems like there's a whole lot of people that want to be duck hunters, but then when it comes time to put, when the rubber meets the road and you call your buddy and you're like, okay, it's, 3 in the morning, it's time to get up and get moving. There's not a whole lot of guys that are willing to actually roll out of bed and go with you.
Yeah.
To find those people that are addicted and passionate about it. They'll show up if you invite them right in the spot and the time, but them to put, miles on the windshield or up for gear, people start to kind of weed themselves out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I'll say too, maybe there aren't too many other styles of hunting other than waterfowl that require the amount of, I'll say, money that like waterfowl hunting does. I mean, like, you know, I don't want to offend any like elk hunters or anything, because trust me, I have friends who elk hunt like out west, where they're like riding horses in, you know, into the back country, and they're spending thousands on gear each year
You can
to do
spend
this
as much
stuff.
money as you want to on it for sure.
Yeah, so I mean, there like really is no ceiling for that, and I feel like it's kind of the same with waterfowl. You know, it's like, you know, you can buy decoys and they'll last a while, and you know, your decoys don't have to look super fancy, but
No.
they're gonna get shot, they're gonna get holes in them. You know, boats cost money. You know, as the old saying goes, bust out another thousand. So it's like there's so much that goes into it. Yeah, that when you try to find those diehard people, it can be difficult because it requires a lot of commitment.
Especially, I feel like in PA and in the Atlantic Flyway in general, going back to like shows are now with all the YouTube channels, which I love watching too, just as much as the next guy. But you get guys that watch, people out in like Kansas and Nebraska, and they have a 5 mallard limit and they're just dropping mallards left and right, and they have, specks coming in all these different species. Some dude in the Atlantic Fly was watching it, and it's like, yeah, I want to do that, but he doesn't realize that that's not really our reality on the East Coast, and he's just looking
Yeah.
at all the stuff that guy has. There's full of decoys, giant boats, setting out thousands decoys, A-frame blinds, pit blinds, paying, $1,000 for a field for a hunt. That's not really something we can do over here.
Yeah, and Gerald and I touched on that quite a bit in the last episode, and I mean, I'll admit I fell for that in the beginning. You
Oh,
know,
I think we all do.
I think at one point I've had like close to 200 duck decoys, and I think I got like I just bought another dozen the other day just because I have some. I like green headgear decoys, but
Okay.
they don't make the decoys anymore that I like. I have some of the older, like fully flocked green headgear ones, and the flocking is all faded on them. So I they look horrible. Like the green heads are like frosted green. So I was up at Cabela's the other day and they had decoys on sale for Black Friday. So I was like, cool,
Oh, I
like
should have thought of that.
I'll grab a dozen of them real quick, you know, just so I have some fresh looking decoys and stuff. But yeah, I fell for that and it was just like, we gotta have. What's funny is I fell for it, but I didn't. I had like 200 decoys. Well, I think when I started, I probably had like 100. I had probably somewhere between 60 and 100 decoys. But we had a canoe. We didn't even have a boat for like the first season. It was like, you know, I fell for it, but I didn't. And yeah, I kind of went into it with that mentality of it's like, just, you know, there's gonna
It
be
kind
ducks
of turns
everywhere.
into,
And it's like, wait a second, this is not how it is here. Maybe out there that's how it is, but that is not how it is here. And through the years, you know, I've really reduced my decoy spread. Even so, I kind of had an influx in decoys last year. I found a ton of like AVNX decoys for a really good price, and I bought them all because it was just like, this is a great price for these decoys. The guy was selling them cheap because he didn't like how they rode in the water. He wanted hand carved decoys, so he sold all the AVNX ones and the green headgear ones super cheap, and went out and bought a bunch of hand carved wooden decoys. Which kudos to him
Yeah,
because
that's dedication right there.
that is dedication right there. But
I think
yeah,
we'd
so
all like to do that, but man, yeah, if for any of those waterfowl hunters that have looked into what it would cost to commission like a dozen hand-carved gunning decoys, be prepared to chop off a body part. Like they're worth it just alone, but you think plastic decoys are expensive, that's a whole nother world.
Oh yeah. And I've wanted to get into like hand carving decoys. And the big thing is just you know, I've been working two jobs and I run the call business, and
Find the time.
I haven't been super busy with calls lately. I've been kind of working on some stuff under the radar, you know, some new calls and everything. But you know, I've been busy with that, so it's like I don't have time to even start experimenting with hand carving decoys. But it's like, over the years, and this kind of ties back into, you know, that whole everybody thinks, you know, you got to have all this stuff. Over the years, everything I have has just gotten less. And, you know, it's not like I'll go out and it's just, you know, I want to just shoot all mallards, all mallards. I actually have started to try and like, okay, like I'll shoot my two mallards, but I know there's other birds here. That I didn't know this like my first couple years. Like we shot a Drake pintail with like
Oof.
a 5-inch sprig on it the first year. My uncle shot
Was it in PA?
MPA.
Unicorn.
Yeah, and like we took it home and threw it in a pan and seared it up, and it
Oh,
was just like
that's
every
right in
year
the heart.
he's yeah. Well, now I'm like, man, that was really stupid of us because I've never seen another pintail in PA before,
I
you
think
know,
I
since
saw
then.
one once, and even then, I wasn't even quite sure because it went by so fast. But I'm like, that looked a lot pointier on the back end than I'm used to seeing.
Yeah, and it's hard too because widgeon, I do will say this, I have seen quite a few widgeon. I've even gotten a band some widgeon about 20 minutes from my house, and they can start to form a sprig on their tail.
Some of the really mature older ones kind of get a sprig going right in the middle
Yeah,
of the tail.
which that's even to me, it's like I'd rather shoot that than a pintail. If you shoot a widgeon that's got a sprig on its tail, I mean, that's awesome. But yeah, and then he sends me the picture every year because it shows up in his phone, like his
Right.
phone, like memories from however
Yep.
many years ago.
Just rubbing it in your face.
And I asked him, I said, how much do you regret not mounting that bird, knowing what we know now about hunting around here? He's like, oh man, it's a just I just he's like, I feel so empty every time I see the picture and think about it. It's like, yeah, he also shot a bluebill that year. Like he's never really been like into the duck hunting like I was. Like he'll
Right.
come out with me and my buddy just because
But
it's like
not
he likes to
addicted
get out
like
with us.
you. Yeah.
But And he loves it, but he's not like sucked in. And he has kids and his own
Oh,
business and
yeah, I
everything.
mean.
So he doesn't have the time. But it's like this man comes out and he always shoots like
There's
he
always
shot the
that one
pintail, the
guy that
bluegill. It's
you
like,
just
how are
didn't.
you the person to do this? I'm out here 40 days a
Exactly.
year.
That's always how it's the guy that grinds gets to shoot the run-of-the-mill stuff, and then the buddy that you invite along once a year shoots the banded bird, shoots the rare species, and you're like, what? He just rolled out of bed, 20 minutes ago, and he's shooting pintails. I'm out here from like my 10th time already, and I can't get anything on the ground that cool. But I do like the fact that you brought that up. Don't get me wrong, I like greenheads as much as the next guy. There are other species out there, even in the Atlantic flyway, that I don't think get a lot of attention. It's all about, getting greenheads on the ground. And I like that very quickly, same kind of thing. I'm like, there's other birds out here. It first started, it was seeing birds flying around that I'm like, well, that's not a mallard. What is it? And I
Right.
start, working, early on. On bird ID, and I'm like, well, what are these, things flying around? And then I kind of started poking my head into the diver world, especially once I started hunting with my buddy down in Maryland. We hunt the Chesapeake, some bigger rivers, so there's divers hanging around and talking to him. I'm like, okay, well, what's this kind of dive? You got bluebills, and even within bluebills, you have a greater scop and a lesser scop. And it's like, well, even the fact
Yeah.
that it has two names, and then you have, redheads, ringnecks, canvas backs, and those. Kind of some of like the bigger, better eating divers, and then you have bufflehead, golden eyes, ruddy
Hey, don't
ducks.
be hating on my buffalo heads now,
I
man.
don't.
Come
I
on.
that. It took me a long time to shoot my first, because like I said, I was just kind of wandering around, figuring out myself. I would shoot
Yeah.
mergansers every time I went out, but it took me a long time to shoot my first duck. My first actual duck was a hen bufflehead. So buffleheads
Yeah.
have a soft spot for me, but I
Yeah.
started realizing there's all these other species of ducks out here that you can target. You can sometimes get lucky, they'll wander into a puddle duck spread. But, diver hunting is almost a sport within the sport, which is something I've exploring more and more the last couple of years, which I think we were kind of talking about. I'm
Yeah.
buying up, I'm on all the, the Facebook group, Craigslist, looking for used, beat up old decoys, old flambos from like the 90s. And, I'll buy them in bulk. And then in the off season, repaint them into whatever kind of divers I want, whatever sea ducks I want, because we do some sea duck hunting. And if you look into the price of diver decoys, I mean, like a half dozen can be, $200 depending on the
Oh yeah.
brand. And kind of like goose hunting, diver hunting can be a bit of a numbers game. It's like you kind of need a big, colorful presence, not so much like a super detailed sculpture of a on the water. So if half a
Yeah.
dozen is 200 bucks, you can't put together a three, four, five dozen, diver spread, but you can repaint some cheap decoys and kill birds over them.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, buffleheads, they also have kind of a special place in my heart, 'cause one of the first couple years I was duck hunting. Like, I'd seen them, and it was just one of those things where it's like I knew that I kind of, saw them first couple years out. I'm like, man, like I really want to shoot one of those birds just because it's like they look cool. Like when
It's
you get
a
real
black and
close,
white fast flying bird.
and all the iridescence and stuff in the head, I'm like, I really want to shoot one of those. And then, like the first year we had them like in our spread, like before shooting, like but we didn't know what they were. It's our first time out. It's like I don't want to shoot something, and it's like it's a grebe,
I was just gonna say it's the infamous grebe incident on Facebook for all the guys that are on the Facebook duck hunting forums. Everybody will know what we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's like I didn't want that to happen, so we let him go. And then it's like, oh no, we could have shot this. And finally we have one day, it was a slow start to the morning. I think it was like first hour, we didn't see anything but these three buffleheads that came down the river, and they kind of were sitting off like 400 yards. So I was using a single shot at the time. It's a single shot. It's like a 30 some inch barrel, full choke. And it's a great gun, especially for, like kind of like a passing shot thing, which it's funny now. I don't even use it for ducks because if they're not within 25 yards, I won't shoot at them.
I like
But
them in tight as well.
yeah. But I paddled out my buddy's kayak, and I was kind of just going to float in on them. And they got up like not even a minute after I started paddling out, and they flew the other way. And then all of a sudden, they just turned around. They're coming like straight at me. I'm like, what? So I shoot left-handed. They were coming on my left side. So I'm right-handed, and I shot right-handed for years, but I can't see very well out of my right eye. So I had to learn to shoot left-handed in order to shoot for waterfowl so I can see, the bead and see what I'm shooting at. So I quick drew the gun up on my right shoulder and just kind of guessed it. When I shot, first of all, that buffalo had dipped out of my shot spread just barely because my buddies were watching it. The recoil from that gun spun me completely upside down in the kayak. It was like 28 degrees out in the middle of January. And I was in the water way longer than anybody should be in the water and survive. I was in for like 10 minutes probably. I had
Ooh,
to,
in January. Yeah, that's cold.
I never dropped my gun. I held the kayak paddle, and I fell in like the channel. And my buddy, he didn't know how to drop. You know, I was screaming. He didn't know how to drop the motor on my boat. So he's like trying to figure it out. And finally, I was like, I'm gonna die here if I don't do something. So I know the river really well there. So I was after, now I think about it, I'm like, why are you screaming like a lunatic? Like, you haven't hunted down there 8 dozen times before
Hey,
this.
cold water makes you do weird
It
things.
does. It does. And so I started kind of like half like swimming with, because, I'm holding my gun, the kayak paddle, and I'm freezing cold. I can't feel anything. So I'm like, I know this channel drop like ends here and there's a sandbar. So I start swimming and I get over to it. Then I walked all the way over to the island. Of course, it's the opposite direction where the blind is, but it was closer to go that way to where I could stand than it was to go the other way towards the blind. So I get over, my buddy, I immediately stripped out all my clothes, and my buddy finally, by then he paddled over. Thank God we had a paddle on the boat. I wanted to keep hunting. He gave me like a pair of clothes. I kind of like warmed up a second. I'm like, all right, so like I got extra clothes in the truck. We gonna keep going. And he looked at me. He goes, "You're effing crazy, man." And I was like, "Nah, like I'm serious. Like I want to
Yeah, I
keep
can't
going."
say I've had the same experience where I paddled out in a kayak and took a shot with the barrel, perpendicular. Found out real quick that that boat is going to rock no matter how much you think you're leaning
Yeah.
into it.
This did not rock. This spun upside down. So I had a vendetta with buffaloheads since that day. And last year I was hunting coastal Jersey, and I got my rematch with them. And so they hold a special place in me because it was like I almost died for that stupid little bird.
It's you just get tunnel vision. It's like, man, there's birds in front of me. Anything I can see and worry about right now.
Yeah, it's funny too because like you can be freezing cold, you can be cold in the blind as soon as them birds start working. Sometimes as soon as you see birds, like I'll have that. I mean, it somehow always works out, my waders leak or whatever. But thing is like I won't buy new waders. I'll just keep wearing them,
Yeah, waders are expensive.
hoping something changes. It
Yeah, like,
doesn't.
oh, maybe this year the leak suddenly repaired.
Yeah, right. We're like I had a pair last year and they were too small for my feet, but it's like
That could be a killer.
I really didn't want to spend the money on waders. So I just wore them, but the problem was is they were so tight that my feet wouldn't stay warm because the warmth of my feet would just, it would go
There's
out
no
through the
air gap
waders.
to.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, my feet froze constantly, but as soon as those bird, like as soon as birds started working, I was like, "Oh, my feet aren't cold anymore." Like, how does that work? Like,
Your
they were just
senses just
freezing.
they just switch. All of a sudden you're care about, whether you're hungry or tired or cold. It's the thing that I woke up early and dragged myself out here to do is in front of me. So that's like your brain just singularly focuses in on that for that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it does for sure. So, but yeah, recently, like, so I started banning waterfowl with the Game Commission here in PA last year. And I just help out, it's just fun. It's something fun to experience
It's
and
definitely something
everything.
I'd like to do at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, I did the turkey banding study with them. I helped with that and stuff. That was really cool to be a part of too. That was probably cooler than the waterfowl. But I remember the first day I showed up to help band ducks with the warden. We walked down to where the net cage is that, they catch the ducks in to band them. And there's like two gadwall and three widgeon in the trap. He's like, "Oh, we got some widgeon and some gadwall." And my head right there about exploded.
Yeah, you just don't see them in PA all that often, at least not in Southeast PA where we're at.
We're 20 minutes north of my house. And it's like, he's like, "Yeah, this will be like the 16th widgeon I've banded this week." And it was just like instantly my head exploded because I'm like, I've lived here my whole life and I've never seen these birds. We're 20 minutes away from my house. We were up around Greenland Reservoir, which you can't hunt, so naturally that's where they're all at. But
They're, yeah, smart like that.
yeah, like gadwall, widgeon, like I think right now there's over like 100 shovelers hanging out up there.
That's
It
another, I've
gets
never seen travelers while I'm out, in places I can hunt.
yeah.
I've never seen one fly by.
Yeah, now, so after that, I really started paying attention to birds and stuff. And I've heard gadwall multiple times while out on the river. And I've seen them places we hunt and stuff. And I've seen them places flying. And I'm like, okay, like now I start paying attention and stuff. So yeah, I love shooting greenheads, love shooting mallards. Like it's fun. But now what I've tried to do is I really try and I mean, this all lasts so long to when it's like ducks start working and my head kind of just goes towards, especially if I don't have anything yet. If I don't have anything yet, if it's just, oh, mallards, like, okay, we're gonna shoot some mallards.
Oh, yeah, I'll
But
never down, but there's being in the Atlantic Flyway where you can have two, even if you have the perfect situation, you have 2 feet down in the decoys, and you knock them both down, without having to reload. It's like, okay, well, now I'm done on greenheads. Do I pack up and leave, or do I try for a different species?
well, see, that's the thing. Like, I noticed, like, I see so many black ducks around in our area. So, like, I'll
That's
wait it
kind of a good,
out.
that's a kind of a good kept secret around here is, we're lucky to
Well,
have black ducks.
now I ruined
Yeah, now every guy is going to have, a dozen black duck decoys out on every body
it.
of water, but that's,
Yeah.
that's like the one duck we get. Some of the other flyways don't. I know they kind of work their way into the Mississippi Flyway,
It's
but
rare.
guys in Kansas aren't shooting black ducks. That's like very rarely do guys out in the Midwest envy a bird that we can shoot, but that's one of them. I've talked to some of those
Yeah.
guys, and that's high up on their list. They're like, man, I want to shoot, like a seasoned black duck where it's got that real definitive line on the neck from brown to, real dark brown, like a real purple on it. And in the last couple of years, I've been seeing the black increase, which is good to see. And we get a it's something you can tack on to your mallard limit, and they travel together, so you got to be real good at IDing because you don't want to drop, one too many hens. But if
Yeah.
you can pick them out, you can combos out of the same spread.
And I've found too, and I kind of got to give my buddy Corey some credit on this one, because he kind of really sold me on it. But I found black duck decoys. If you get flocked black duck decoys, like I love the hand carved decoys we were talking about, but if there's one decoy that I think shouldn't be a painted decoy, it's a black duck. I think every black duck decoy should be flocked because that color, first of all, it pops on the water
It
and
does.
it's so visible. Like you can lose mallards on the water very easily just because they blend in.
Got the
But the
gray
black,
tan back, yep.
yeah, the black ducks, they pop. And too, the other thing is, they're black decoys, like they shine. And it's just, I can't stand that when it's a painted black duck decoy. It's like, if you're going to make a black duck decoy, you should just flock it because it looks way better. It works way better in a decoy spread. And, you can't, there isn't much you can do to get rid of the shine when literally the entire decoy is black. There isn't a paint out there that's not going to have some form of a glisten. When the sun's beating down on it. So I usually, I think Corey has them all now. I sold them to him, but I probably have one that I stole back from them and
It's
just
funny you
haven't given it
mentioned that.
back.
That's I've been like so every year I try to add something new into my arsenal in terms of decoys, and the one that I said I was going to get before this year but didn't wind up getting was black ducks, because like you said, like them being flocked, it's not that they just don't reflect light, it's almost like they're coated in a black hole, and that absence of reflection pops at a distance both for humans and birds. It's like the same thing for divers, where that white contrast, they can see it pop at a distance. This is almost the same thing for puddle ducks, and mallards will key in on that too, because they know what black ducks look like and they see that black body and they're like, okay, we know what those are, let's go hang out.
And what kind of really sold me on using at least one of them in a spread, and I have it on a jerk cord, was Corey was hunting this. He was hunting somewhere, I can't remember where he was hunting, but he had our Mojo jerk spreader out. And he had, I think he had one or he had two black duck decoys on it. I don't know. They were on there though. And he was working that and they were working two black ducks. And both of those ducks almost like they literally were just magnetized right to that black duck decoy. And that's where they wanted to land. And I don't even think it was near kind of the kill hole necessarily. It was kind of off over here. But they were just like they got tunnel vision to land where that decoy was. And it was like everything else is mallards, but they saw that and it was just, it sucked them right in. And yeah, and it works. And they, yeah, like you said, they have such high visibility, especially when they're flocked, that yeah, they work great as a little something to add for the spread. I sold my older ones to Corey. Not like I can't use them, but I'll probably pick some
Right.
up
Like you
for
said, flock
next season.
decoys, the downside is once they and worn, then they start looking, kind of shabby, and you got to either reflock them, which is a whole process, or you got to, pony up decoys.
Yeah, that's what kind of why I haven't retired my greenhead gear ones. I've just kind of taken them. They're not in my bag anymore. They're at home and stuff just because I need to reflock them. And really not even so much the whole decoy. It's just that green, the head. It just doesn't pop anymore. And I tried, I was like, well, I was like, maybe if I spray like some like oil on there, like let me see if I can spray something on there, WD-40, maybe bring like back that shine. It doesn't work, so I just got to reflock them and stuff now. And yeah, I bought those Cabela's ones. I'll run them for now, and probably after the season's over and stuff, I'm gonna take the time and reflock those decoys because I do love them. I love the way they look and stuff. But yeah, flock decoys, they do. They just look so realistic. And I think flock decoys too, when it comes to greenheads, is the green head looks better because there's is not one paint scheme out there that can replicate the iridescence of a Drake mallard's head. But at least with the flocking, you kind of get that,
As
like,
close as you can get.
yeah, like there's just that, I want to say texture to it, like
Yeah,
the
it's more three
coloring.
dimensional.
Yeah, it just looks better. I mean, I've had tons of different types of brands of mallard decoys, and it's like it's still one thing drives me nuts. It's like, yeah, it just doesn't do it. I mean, it does it for the ducks, but it drives me nuts.
Well, that's the thing. As the humans, we probably care more about what certain things look like than the ducks do. Like, if you could somehow talk to a duck and be like, "Hey, so tell me, does this really matter?" They'd probably go, "No, but it just bothers you as a human, and you got to do something about it."
Yeah, absolutely. So, but I know we've talked before, and you are big on the diver hunting. Now, that's something I kind of wanted. I've been trying to dip my toes in a little more. I know what kind of got us talking about it through Facebook Messenger was the bluebill decoys, the old mallards that I painted into bluebills. And really, they're just black and white decoys, and I painted the blue bill on them just so I could say they're bluebill decoys.
Exactly.
But we got to talking, you're being in the diver hunting, and I want to know what got you so hooked on divers? Because if you ask me, for somebody who is newer to waterfowl hunting, you started in 2017, you kind of jumped over the puddle And I intend to put a pun in there because typically puddle ducks are a lot easier for a newer waterfowl hunter to get into. When you think and you look at hunting divers, you're hunting big water most of the time. You're hunting big decoy spreads. You're hunting, deep water and stuff. I feel like it's kind of the next level above hunting puddle ducks. You need more than just a kayak canoe or a John boat and a dozen decoys to really make it happen. So what really got you hooked into it, and how did you get into doing that?
Sure, that's a great question. It almost is going to kind of contradict that. So where I spend a lot of time hunting, it's a larger reservoir. So it's a solid body of water, which can tend to hold a lot of ducks, but there's a lot of area for them to spread out. And especially later and later in the season, as woodies would push out, mallards would, come in, but they're here today, gone tomorrow. I started noticing that what was sticking around consistently were divers, and even more specifically, ringnecks, which to the untrained eye can look like bluebills. And I think they're an underrated diver. They're really cool looking. But I, man, there's all these, and in bigger flocks too. You'd see small groups of mallards flying by, but you would never really see, a dozen come by at a time. But I would routinely see a dozen ringnecks come by, a dozen bluebills come by. I'm like, I want those guys to come and stop in front of me. And I'm like, well, they're not doing it when I just have my mallard decoys out. My buddy that hunts, the Chesapeake, which, back in the day was kind of like the diver mecca on the East Coast.
I would say it still is.
For our area, it is. Then you can kind of push down into coastal Carolina and into
That's, yeah, that's true.
redheads and cans pretty good, which you can't so much do on anymore. But I'm like, hey, how do you target these divers? And then he's the one that turned me on the whole, hand painting old decoys to save money, making your own long lines. Because kind of like we were saying in the beginning, you can spend as much money on a sport as you want, but trying to do it, in a cost effective way is almost a game. Because I don't have all the money in the world just to go out and buy top of the line gear for everything. So when I started seeing all these divers on my local reservoir, I'm like, I got to figure out a way to get them to come by. So I'm like, okay, well, I need to make a long line, and I could go out and buy a long line. I'm like, but paracord's cheaper. So start rigging up paracord with fishing weights. I did spend some money for the long line clips, because that makes getting the decoys on and off quickly a lot easier. And then I started looking at my, like, okay, well, there's these decoy rafts to where you can clip a whole bunch of decoys and make it just like look like a big raft of birds hanging out there. Rafts are $300-$400 online. So then I started making my own rafts out of like chicken wire, stuff, that kind of material, trying to emulate what I was seeing guys use on like super big water, like the Chesapeake or Hudson Bay or any of those other East Coast big bodies of water, to do it cheaper and a little bit smaller for my reservoir. And it's funny because I'm mostly hunting from shore, even for the divers. I am hunting out of a kayak most, and I'm still routinely pulling different species of divers. And that was what got me hooked, was I'm like, there's all these really cool different old ducks out here that most guys don't really seem to talk about, but I want to like interact with them. I'm like, there's no other way I'm going to be able to anytime looking or interacting with these birds directly unless I'm hunting them. So that's really what kind of got me to quickly go from just puddle to puddle duck, and diver. Or once it gets real late season, I'll just switch to strictly diver hunting. That's what I'll focus on.
Yeah, is this on? You don't have to give a specific location, but is this on the reservoir that we've talked about before?
Yeah, I think so. It's,
Yeah,
knowing how
yeah,
close we are, probably think of the one I'm thinking about. And
yeah,
a lot of
and
guys even there don't really, bother with them.
yeah, and I think the thing with that reservoir too is it's deep. There's not too many shallow spots inside of the huntable area of the reservoir. And I mean, that's probably one of the reasons too why it gets a lot of divers is because there's tons of food down there for them that the
There
puddle
is.
ducks that they're not getting when they're there. Puddle duck, I see more divers there than I do puddle ducks, and I would probably say that's because the puddle ducks don't hang around because there's only so much food there for them to eat. But with the divers, they can realistically, any of the diving ducks that are in that, species category can dive to the bottom of that
Oh,
reservoir in
easily.
its deepest part if they want to. So the bottom's, full of food for them that the puddle ducks aren't diving down to get to. So
And
that would probably make sense why there's so many
it's
that
big
come through there.
enough. It's big enough that we've like certain species of divers will winter there. Like it's big enough and spread out enough that even if they're getting hunted and getting pressured, are sections that are either just totally off limits to hunting or so hard to get to that guys don't bother that, when they need, to take a breather, they know they can go hang out over in that area. And since it's big, relatively deep body of water where we're at, it never really freezes. You might get
Yeah, it
ice
doesn't
around
freeze
the
solid.
edge, but nothing freezes. There's always open water. I've killed every species of diver reservoir with the exception of the two that I want the worst, which is a redhead and a can. But I've literally shot every other species on that lake, and I don't think guys know they're there.
Yeah, apparently there was a pair of canvasbacks there about a week ago, but I haven't seen or heard anything else about it, so.
I've run into some watchers that say they usually show up right when the season closes, which is about par for the course.
Yeah, exactly. That's when all the cool stuff shows up, right when, or right after it closes.
Right
But
after we
yeah, and the other thing too with that reservoir is I think one of the reasons why it gets the birds that it does because the guy who we hunted it with, I guess it was like a week or so ago, he's been hunting there for quite a while. I mean, many, 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 many years. And he's like, I never shoot a lot of ducks here. But I shoot a lot of cool ducks here. He's like, I've shot, I think he shot Widgeon there. I believe he shot Widgeon there, but like Gadwall,
I've never
like.
seen Widgeon there. See, that's funny. I don't see the ducks, but I probably see divers. Other guys don't.
I saw Gadwalls while we were there. He shot ringnecks there. I think he shot bluegills there. He might have said he shot a redhead there, but he's like, I never see a lot of ducks, but he golden eye, that's what he shot there. Common golden
There's
eye.
a lot of Goldeneye. Goldeneye and Ringneck load up in there, and they don't tend to leave.
Yeah, I believe right now the ringnecks are pretty stacked in there. I thought by the hundreds, but I saw
By the dozens, which is good for us.
yeah, that's about what I saw up there. But yeah, it's one of those places where it's kind of like the Bermuda Triangle. In our area for birds, there's not a lot of stuff, but some strange stuff will just show up here, So yeah, it's definitely an interesting reservoir to hunt, but it's yeah, that's cool that that's how you got into divers. It was just locally, and really, that's not too big a water. Now, would I be out there in a John boat when the wind's whipping at 40 miles an hour? Probably not,
No.
but.
Yeah, I pay attention real close to the wind speed when I'm out on a kayak. I'll push it probably further than a lot of other guys, but that there's a hard cutoff point where you don't want the game commission, fishing you out of the lake.
Yeah, I almost went there Saturday. But then I saw that like we had possible 46 mile an hour wind gusts
Trying
and I was
to
just like
think I was out there Saturday.
yeah, I was like I haven't hunted it enough to really know how that water acts when the wind's whipping that much and I was like I'm just going to have me and my boat. I was like I'll just go where I know,
There's a big
for a
mix of
soul
duck
motion.
boats. I feel like I know a lot of the guys that regularly hunt that reservoir because we all kind of bump into each other and hunt with one another occasionally. And you have everything from guys with small flat bottom John boats up to dudes with like 17-foot TBDs all hunting the body of water. Now, it is varied enough that those guys are probably heading to different spots that are better suited for those boats, but you'll have those different boats on that
Yeah.
body of water.
Well, the guy I went with, he has a 14 TBD.
Who that is.
Greg.
Yeah,
His name's Greg.
I think I know his, I've bumped into his son, I think.
I don't know if he has a son.
Or maybe I'm thinking of the son. There's a guy that runs one and it's a father and a son that are out there a lot.
Yeah, this isn't him, but he has a
Okay.
14 TBD, and I'll tell you what, that is one sweet boat because I rode in it. And I was like, I gotta have one of these. And Gerald and I were talking about this, and
Yep,
it
I
was just
heard that.
like, I looked one up, and I was like, I don't gotta have one
I just did
that
that a few days ago because same thing. I was like,
much.
oh, I need to look into what those boats are that I keep seeing running around, and I'm like, oh boy, that's pretty steep. I'll stick with my kayak. Thank you very much.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The thing is sick. And if I had
Oh.
$20,000 laying around to buy like a situational use duck boat, I would buy one because it's a flat bottom. It's got a Kevlar front to it. Like the front
Yep.
of the boat, the
The
hull is
bow, yep.
Kevlar. The bow, it is Kevlar. Like he's like, yeah, I can push like logs out of the way with this thing and it doesn't hurt. Break ice. That's what it's meant
Those
for. It's meant for breaking ice.
they're meant to hunt dive. That's primarily what they're for. Guys will use them to
Yeah.
hunt puddles, but
Yeah, the gunnels come up super high, so like chop if you get down like coastal water and stuff, like
it almost looks like a
obviously.
submarine. Like it looks like the
Yeah,
top of
that's
a moving through the water.
exactly. But then like we're out there and you know, we're cruising along and it's just a 20 horse motor. But, like we come in and we're meeting two of my buddies at the spot and he's like comes in and I mean he's drifting this boat. Because it just glides so smooth across the smooth water. And I'm like, I'm literally sitting in a duck boat drifting right now. Like, this is awesome.
It's
You
funny when I was
know?
listening to you and Gerald talk about different duck boats, it got me going of like what would probably be the like jack of all trades duck boat. And of the ones I've been in, I want to say my buddy from Maryland's boat has we've put different roles. We've taken it out on the Chesapeake in like 3 or 4 foot, sea duck hunting. Like probably wasn't super to do it, but we did it and nobody fell overboard. So, we were out on big water, slightly rough water, hunting sea ducks. It handled that well. We've up into, narrow parts of like the Potomac in Western Maryland where it gets to be, a small river. We've hunted, the mouths of rivers. And he has, I believe it's a 23 foot semi V hull with like a 25 or horse motor. And we've been able to pretty much do everything we wanted to do in that boat.
Yeah, so Corey had a 14-foot John boat. I now have it. We had a long tail motor for it, and we were like, listen, this will be awesome for the river we hunt because it'll go from 12 feet to like 8 inches like that. And then we got it. And it's like, man, you got to have some arms on you to operate this thing. You're holding on to a 22 horsepower lawnmower or generator engine, you know, trying to control a boat. I was like, yeah. So we ended up getting rid of that. And then Corey bought a Mod V and he took his 20 horse that was on the 14, put on the Mod V. And the Mod V came from Jersey. It had this 9.9 Pro Kicker. And he put that on the 14 and I got the 14. Pro Kicker was sweet for two reasons. It had electric start and it had electric trim. I could trim up and down with the push of a button. It was sweet. Thing was so slow. Not like I'm necessarily trying to win any races here, but I mean like me and my girlfriend and nothing else in the boat, and we would go 8 miles an hour. It was just so slow. And so I was looking at stuff. You know, I've built dirt bike engines before. I've done it. So I'm like, all right, there's got to be something I can do to this thing. And it was like, yeah, I could, but you know, it's like it's a lot of money. So my uncle had this 9.9, and me, you know, which that's a 9.9. He had this 9.9 two-stroke. It's an old Nissan from God knows when. My buddy and I used to use that on his 16-foot John boot, and it didn't work well. But it got us where we needed to go. But I just remember it was faster than this Pro Kicker was because Pro Kicker is really meant for trolling. So I threw that on the back of my 14. It worked great. Like it actually planed out on the 14. It would never plane on the 16. I think it was just too much. And so then the trouble was, though, is when it's just me in the boat, even if I put all my gear up in the front, like the very front, I just, the weight's still wrong, and it won't plane out because the bow just rises too much. But it's like, if I trim down anymore, I'm limited to like a foot. I gotta be at least like 2 feet
right,
of water.
Start hitting bottom, yeah.
Yeah. So I got like a 4 foot piece of PVC and I attached it to the tiller handle because the tiller handle was too short as it was. I was like craning my arm around behind me. I was out on the river on yesterday. I had that boat going 20 miles an hour with that little 9.9 on it. I was like, dang, like this thing. And I was able to shift.
A huge thing.
Yeah, it really is. Because I got that weight shifted a little further forward in that boat. And I mean, I was cruising. At one point, like I heard it. It was pretty much just the prop and the very back, like foot of the boat was touching the water. And that was it. Like you could hear it. I might have to put a cavitation, like the hydrofoil fins on there to help with that. But yeah, it's hard to find like a jack of all trades duck boat because like that works great for me. Like
right.
I don't have to win an Arkansas timber race, you know, to a hole. I'm not running across mud flats in Jersey with it. And even if, you know, I run into a mud flat in like New Jersey, it's light enough. You can push or pull it around. And I don't really hunt that big of water, so it's perfect for me. And that's one thing Gerald and I talked about, was just finding the right duck boot for yourself.
Yep. I guess it comes down to a lot. Do you hunt mostly local? Are you a guy that'll drive, you know, four states over and hunt an environment you don't ever normally hunt?
Right. Yeah. So, but we are coming up on about 45 minutes here, so I'm on a 45 minutes an hour. So let's, yep. I want to wrap this up just so we're not going too far over time, but it was really sweet to have you on and get to sit down and talk with you. You know, like I said, I just love talking duck hunting with people and, you know, you can Facebook message all you want, but when you sit down and have a conversation with somebody about duck hunting, it's really cool to learn the stuff that you do. So, and I definitely want to try and get out and maybe hunt some divers with you over there on the lake
awesome.
This year, man.
Yeah, we'll have to make that happen.
Absolutely. So, well, Grayson, thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with absolutely, man. And everybody, you are listening to the Northern Timber Outfitters Foulcast. Thank you.